Well, good evening. So, if we go back a few thousand years, 2,000 years, man certainly did not know what the brain was for. And if you look at it anatomy-wise, it's maybe understandable. It's been compared to just a bunch of cottage cheese. It's kind of this lump, and I'll show you a picture of a human brain. I don't know if you've ever seen an actual true picture, but I want to prepare you for that. And if you don't want to see it, you don't have to, because it is the raw, true human brain. And always be respectful. I'm sure you understand that when somebody dies, they can give their body, called a cadaver, for research. And aren't you glad that people do that? It'd be unfortunate for a surgeon to do his first surgery on the heart with a living person. Okay, so that's done for research, and I think we certainly want to be respectful of that. So go back 2,000 years, they did not realize that the brain was kind of our thinking. What did they believe? I know some of you have heard me give parts of this, at least, before in schools. So maybe you can answer some of these questions. What did they believe? Yes?
It was the heart or the bowels?
The heart. Yeah, the heart. That's why we still talk about a heart today. Because of that misunderstanding 2,000 years ago, and back to Aristotle, etc. What did they believe the brain was? Just the Egyptians simply discarded the brain and kept the heart. They believed it was just phlegm. Doesn't sound so nice. And that when you blow your nose, you are simply releasing some pressure from your brain. Well, we know you can blow your nose all you want, and you're not losing any brain substance at all. But that is what they believed. So it's fascinating what they believed about the brain compared to what we know today. Sometimes considered the least understood part of creation, though, the brain, because of its incredible complexity. So tonight we're going to focus more on anatomy, and then the next time more on physiology. Anatomy simply means, what does the brain look like structurally and parts and pieces of it? If you have questions, of course, please ask as we talk, although I know most people don't do that, but feel free to raise your hand. If I think I'll be able to still see you when the lights are down. So anatomy, what structurally, what is it like? Just what does it look like? And then the physiology is more, how does the brain work? Well, we're just going to be able to talk about that a little bit because of the complexity and many, many things, of course, I don't understand. And then we'll also talk about drugs and how drugs affect the brain, and try to connect that specifically to the physiology that we'll try to learn the next time. So that's, I want to obviously go over some anatomy things because it'll make more sense, I think, if we can connect the two. So one more thing before we look at some pictures here. You know our bodies are made of cells, many, many cells. Now, some of you maybe know this number. If you know, you can say or guess how many cells do you think make up the brain? Called neurons. Brain cells are neurons. Same thing. So we have skin cells, we have blood cells. We used to like do that in high school in biology. We'd get somebody to prick their finger and you could see, oh, incredible amount of these little dots. Blood cells. I was never able to see brain cells like in animals. Never tried human, of course. But it's just, it becomes mushy and I could never see them. But they're made of many, many cells. Your brain is made of cells. Anybody want to guess? School students, I mean, they guess all the time, but this isn't school students. About 80 billion. They used to think maybe 100 billion. Now they're saying 80 billion. Doesn't really matter. It's one big number. But to just help us understand just real quickly how big that number is, how many people are in the world?
8 billion.
8 billion. So you have how many times more brain cells than people in the world?
10.
So you would need 10 brain cells from everybody in the entire world to construct a brain. If you would take 10 grains of sand from everybody in the world, you would have an enormous pile. It would weigh a lot. I've tried to calculate, and I can't come up with numbers that are satisfactory. But it would be a lot. Not just 3 pounds. So it helps us to understand how incredibly small brain cells are. If 80 billion would be just as 3 pounds. And I'm just throw this in. We're not going to, of course, study this. But most people don't know, and I certainly didn't years ago. We have about 10 times more cells in our brains than brain cells. So that doesn't sound like there's any. I'm saying that they're in your brain, but they're not brain cells. All right. So our brain, when I say brain cells, we're talking about the neurons, the part that we think with. So there's about 10 times more of those called glial cells or glial, which means glue, because long ago they thought it just kind of glues the brain together, just kind of holds us together. Well, we know now today that's not at all true. We were not going to really talk about those simply because we don't have time, but those cells are highly important, like for scar tissue, as well as keeping the chemical balance correct. So we have 80 billion and another 10 times that are not thinking cells. They're just cells that make your brain work properly. And all that, of course, is in about 3 pounds. All right, so let's go ahead and look at a picture of a brain and see what this actually looks like. Now, again, if you don't like to look at things that are actual human, you don't have to look at it, but I'm going to orient yourself just a little bit. So you know, I'm sure, that there's a left hemisphere and a right hemisphere. So this person's eyes would have been up here, left hemisphere, right hemisphere, and covered with what's called the meninges. And I'll just say real quickly, we talk about headaches, but you never have a headache in actually your brain. Your brain does not have pain receptors. So inside the tissue of your brain, those 80 billion, there's no pain receptors at all. Blood vessels would have some pain receptors, as well as this skin, which is 3 layers, called the meninges, and that's pulled back. So yes, of course we get a headache in our head, but it's actually not in our brain, even though it can feel like it's deep in our brain. It's more on the surface, unless it would be blood vessels. So let's just get a few words, maybe have you repeat them a few times just to see if we can learn a few, because really, now we're not going to study about how our brains learn and hold information really, but if you learn a new word tonight, there is actually a slight chemical change in your brain to be able to accommodate or hold that word. So some of you probably heard of these words already, and here's how I remember it. The biggest part of the brain, the left and the right, is the smaller word called the cerebrum. The small brain back here, which most people don't know they have one, but you surely do, is the cerebellum. So I remember it by the big word is for the little brain. You don't think back here, but it is quite important. We might test somebody here tonight to make sure that they have this, so I might need a volunteer. So the big part of the brain is a smaller word, cerebrum. So the big part of the brain is?
Cerebellum.
And the small part is the cerebellum. It's the?
Cerebellum.
And the big one is?
Cerebellum.
And the small one?
Cerebellum.
Okay, so the cerebrum and the cerebellum. Pretty similar words, but they both have a left hemisphere and a right hemisphere. Notice that. This is way more compact. In fact, has about as many cells as this large part of the brain because it's so, so compact. Also note that it's very what's called convoluted, which of course gives a lot more surface space. So the outside of the brain called the cerebral cortex is simply very convoluted. So if you would take the brain and you would lay it out, it would actually cover quite a large area in comparison to what a ball would with no convoluted structure. So making sense? Now, we sometimes talk about gray matter and white matter. Do you know what would be considered the more correct word for how we, like, what part do we think with? The white matter or the gray matter? It's a little oversimplification maybe, but you know, sometimes you hear people talk about that. Okay, well, it doesn't really matter. The outside is gray matter because as the axons go in and are bundled together, you probably heard of the meninges. I'm sorry. Yeah, the meninges. It's white. And so that white is what is why we call it white matter compared to gray, which would be the cells themselves. We'll get to that later, the cell bodies. All right. Any questions? The left, the right. The big one now, let's see how well we can remember. The big part of the brain is called the?
Cerebrum.
And the small?
Cerebrum.
Ah, excellent. If you didn't know those words and you know them now, in your short-term memory, it's being held. If you remember it yet tomorrow, part of your brain, while you sleep, folks, sleep is really important. School teachers like to know this. While you sleep, indeed, your brain decides what was important that you learned that day and saw that day and decides if it's worthwhile keeping. So it's the job of the school teachers. I tell them sometimes, your job as a school teacher is to make the brains of your students decide that what you said was important enough that while they sleep, part of the brain called the hippocampus will actually file that away into long-term memory. It is quite fascinating. So is sleep important for learning? Yes, it really is. All right. Something that is hard, I cannot explain this whatsoever, but there are people with only half of the brain. And you can see here, you tell me, what do you think this part of the brain is that we just learned? The?
Cerebrum.
And so the cerebrum, the left, unless this is right, I don't know how this one's oriented, the whole hemisphere, so a hemispherectomy, they will actually take out half of the brain in a child. Occasionally, so in a few people that's been done to, because of seizures. I think one was had an operation within a few either weeks or months after he was born because of seizures, and it was the only way to control them. So to take that half of the brain out, what is hard to believe and understand is simply that those people generally are very normal. And doctors cannot explain how they can function normally. Motor skills, thinking skills, if that much of the brain is removed. It tells us at least something about what we call plasticity. You've heard that word, I'm sure, before. The ability of the brain to continue to change and change and change. So we'll look at some of that the next time. Your brain today is slightly different than it was yesterday. Based partly on what you learned and based partly on what you thought about and thought about and thought about. So that's why there's so much focus in the neuroscience world of the importance of what you think, because it continues to change your brain. So neuroplasticity just means your brain can change. And so some of this seemingly, it's argued, but possibly is taking up parts of the brain that would have been done over here. Although, again, there's a lot of debate about how that really works. This would be another picture. Now, this was startling to the science world. This man, I think, was in his 20s when he had some problem with his leg. And why it led to a brain scan, I do not know. But this is a brain scan of an adult that has almost no brain. And they cannot understand how he is married, has children, has a job, an IQ of 70 to 80. And that's a little low, but it's not considered that he's not normal. And they've discovered he only has... So cerebral spinal fluid, you've heard of that word probably, would fill these areas. It normally would fill the ventricles of the brain, but it's filling almost the whole brain. He only has the outside edge, some of it, which would be the cortex area there, cerebral cortex, and that's it. And yet, there he is functioning a normal life. And scientists cannot explain that. So here's a question that we want to probe the next time just a little bit, and that is the mind versus the brain itself. Now, in some ways, we say, well, they're inseparable, but some neuroscientists would very much so argue, of course, that they are quite two different things. Now, a materialistic person that does not believe in God, does not believe in morals, is often will say, no, it's all the function of a brain, but there are important demonstrations and experiments that have shown that indeed our minds do transcend the function of the brain, and I'll try to touch on that the next time, that it is, according to some, and I think we as Christians would believe that, our mind is quite different than our brain, although our brain is an important part of the function of the mind. And it's true, when a person dies, their mind doesn't stay in their body. And I don't know that you could really separate their mind from their soul. It's the real you, we might say. So we're not going to try to split between some of that. But separate between a materialistic person who would not believe in a mind that is above, that transcends the brain activity, or somebody who would not believe in an eternal soul. All right. Let's look at now, and we'll just talk about this a little bit. We will come back to this drawing, or I'll actually probably draw it over here the next time. Let's look quickly at the three main parts, I know there's a little more in here, of a neuron. And then we'll look at an actual picture that was taken, obviously, with like an electron microscope. So what does this brain cell look like? If you look at a blood cell, it's very simple for what you can see. It's just this round disc. Of course, it's complex inside. But this structurally is pretty complex. So let's just look at these three parts. And these words are pretty easy to remember. We can give a quiz a month from now and see if you remember them. The center, I like this, the C, the center is the cell body. So that's pretty easy. The center, which is kind of, if that dies, the brain cell is going to die. So kind of the nucleus is in there. All the goodies of a cell are in the center, called the cell body. That makes some sense. Then there's this hairy part out around. And again, we'll come back to this later as far as physiology. And simply called dendrites. It's this very hairy part out around, a lot more hairy than that, called dendrites. And then there's an arm that takes information away called the axon. So if you hold your hands up, and you don't have to do this because you're not school students, but if you hold your hand up and you wiggle your fingers, what apparently, from what I just said, took that information to the tips of my finger? The axons. So some of your axons are pretty long. Now, an axon does not go from my brain to my toes, but an axon would go down my spinal cord, and then it would synapse or connect to another one and go the rest of the way to my toes. So I would have axons microscopically thin, thread-like, you know, 3-4 feet long. That's what would take the information away. But most axons, and here's a little more where we'll get into this the next time. Most axons do not take information outside the brain. Most axons simply work inside the brain and communicate with other cells. And again, we'll get into that the next time. But that is considered smartness. It is smartness. Smartness is the ability for your brain to communicate with itself. Now, how to explain the person with missing half his brain, I can't do that. Einstein, of course, known to be quite a smart person. When he died, they said, we're going to dig his brain out, even though he didn't give him permission to do that, but he couldn't do anything after he was gone. So they took his brain out and looked at it, and they said, wait, no, it's about like any other one. But when they went into and took a little sliver, he had huge, what's called intercellular connections. That means the ability of this axon to talk to another cell, which it actually talks to the dendrite of another cell. So you can remember that for the next time. But that's, we'll zero into that because that's really where the drugs play into our brains and neurotransmitters and chemicals and those kind of questions, okay? But for now, the axon connects to the dendrites of another cell. And do you notice it fingers out? So this one cell can talk to dozens or 100 or more other cells. So now we have 80 billion cells, all of which can talk to many other cells at the same time. So now the connectedness in our brain is complex beyond what we can begin to wrap our minds around. So again, back to smartness, intellect, at some level it's credited for this part of the brain, the ability of the brain to connect to other parts of the brain. And you can know, I'm sure you know, a little child, this is happening at a phenomenal rate. Some would estimate 1 million new connections are made per second in a little baby, little child, as they just connect and connect. That's not new axons. It's not quite that way, but at least let's just say connections. Thankfully, when you're 50, 60, 70, though, a lot slower, your brain continues to make connections and to other cells. So you continue to build your brain, which is part of memory. Your memory is very much so connected with the ability of the brain to hold information somewhere between the axons and the dendrite of other cells. I know I'm talking pretty fast. Some of this we'll review when we go into the physiology the next time. All right. Let's look at an actual picture. Oh, let's just review. What is the center of a cell? What takes the information away? And what's the hairy part? Okay, we will look at those pretty much more the next time, especially the connection between an axon and the dendrite. All right, here's an actual picture. I think there's a beautiful picture. So, Everybody, what would this part be, do you think? The? What's this hairy part? And what's this? Where's it going? Who knows? It might be wiggling his fingers. Or it might be going over and talking to another cell body. Or maybe both. So I could use one quick example. If I would throw something at you, you would duck before you realize it's even coming, right? Because as that message went into your brain, before you could even think about what you saw, a message was sent to part of your body that said, duck. And so you would duck. And maybe part of your eyes that said, get really big and dilate the pupils. So one axon will talk to many other cells. Therefore, the connections, the intercellular connections, are many, many more than 80 billion, estimated at maybe 100 times more. All right, let's go to something maybe not quite as detailed. So this is now looking at the outside, or we call it the cerebral cortex of the brain. So let's use this little model to help us think about this, right? Left hemisphere, right hemisphere. So this would be the eyes this direction. So that would be this direction. And so we're looking at kind of the outside of it. It'd be this side of the brain, kind of like the outside that you would get to right in the other side of your skull. All right. And we're just going to talk about one part of that. And that's the sensory. So now you know enough about your brain that if I would step on your toe and you would have your eyes closed, you could say, that is my toe. I felt it at my toe. But you know that it is actually in your brain that said, that was my toe area that was stimulated. So that means you have some toe material up here that is connected to your toe. You step on your toe, a message goes, zzz, axon? Well, part of it would be axon, let's say. It would take the information up here and they would say, if you hit that part of my toe, it's going to register right here, and my brain says, that's my toe. Aren't you glad that's all hooked up just right? Or you step on your toe and you would think it was your hand that got hurt, but it isn't that way. How do doctors know this? Well, many ways, but one way, from what I understand, this is, I'll try to say this carefully so it's not graphic, when they would bring people off the battlefield years and years ago that would have some of the cerebral cortex, the outside of the brain, exposed. They could take a little electrode and shock the brain. And that's the same stimulation as stepping on your toe or hitting your back. So if they hit an area, and the person would say, oh, my back. They'd say, that's his back area right there. And then, I mean, it must have been a little comical, I will admit. The surgeon after a while would hit another spot, and they might say, oh, my hand hurts. Oh, hand did not hurt at all. But the part of the brain that is hand material connects to the hand. If you stimulate that, of course it feels like your hand. So your whole body is mapped. You can see maps of this if you have brain books and online access to this. Your whole body is all along it. All your body parts are along here. And so if somebody would have a stroke at a certain part, that could affect the sensation in that for that region of the body. Now, evolution, I just don't think would have done this, could have done this, but that's what neuroscientists say. Well, as it turns out, evolution gave us this and gave us that. But I want to show you that God did not waste much material on your back. David, come up here. And school students volunteer in a church like this. It's hard to get volunteers, so we just tell them to come up. I'm going to show that in David's brain, right along this side here, right? It's not actually red. We just do that so we can see it, which is the outside, the cerebral cortex, which is where this would lie. He does not have much material up here that says, that's my back. His back is not sensitive. God didn't waste much material on his back. So he doesn't have much brain space for back sensitivity, right? This is a sensory part. All right. So David's going to tell me if I'm poking him with, I'm not going to poke real hard. I mean, well, you know. You're going to tell me if I'm poking you with one or two pokers. All right. So, one or two?
One.
One or two?
Two.
One or two?
One.
One or two?
One.
Yep. Works every time. Take your seat. Let's just do this yet, since you're up here. Put your hand out. Close your eyes. One or two?
One. One.
One or two?
One.
One or two?
Two.
Woo! Boy, God must have given you a lot of century in your hand. So, 2 inches apart, an inch and a half apart, one. Because this spot taking information to his brain and this spot taking information to his brain is the exact same spot. We're not going to really talk about that sensory part, but just accept that. So it lands at the same. His finger, though, has a huge amount of sensory area because touching one spot, touching another, two. Because those two spots landed at slightly two different spots in his brain and said that was two spots. So our backs, you would never see a blind person swiping the braille on an exit sign with his back, right? If you wouldn't have a shirt on, you couldn't read anything. Your fingers, ooh, that's an exit sign. Our fingers are so, so sensitive. Our faces, our lips are so sensitive. You can imagine how big of an area your face and your lips would be in a drawing of that called a homunculus. And the back is very small because we don't have much area. Do you believe God could have figured that one out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. That just makes me believe in God just a little bit more. Let me give this little saying now. I think this applies to all of learning, but particularly, I think, to the brain. The larger the island of knowledge, the longer the shoreline of wonder. So if you know this much about your brain, you can kind of imagine and wonder what all you might not know about this much, right? If you're Ben Carson, that would know an enormous amount about the brain. He has the ability to wonder on the edges of his knowledge a whole lot more than me. For a Christian, the wonder of what I don't know should lead us to what? Worship. To the non-Christian, that wonder, I think they're just stuck with wonder. Just like, wow, that's just amazing. That is incredible. Evolution, you know, in the push and pull of evolution through the millions of years, it turns out that. That's what they say over and over again. Turns out that. But for us as Christians, we say, that wonder, that amazement, and the ability to imagine what all we don't know should lead us to worship. All right, let's go to another part. So this would be the brain called the medial side. So if we take the brain and we simply look at it like this, we take this, now we're looking at the center, not the outside, right? Can you picture that now? Eyes in the same direction. We're just pulling this away. When I dissect brains, obviously just animal brains, I am often amazed, though, how when I take the meninges off, it does almost fall into two pieces. You almost have two brains, but not quite. There is a band of, and see if you can tell me what it would be, 300 million fibers that take information back and forth. So those should be axons. 300 million axons called the corpus callosum connects the two. So it almost falls apart, but I like cutting that. So you take the meninges off and then it almost falls into, and you take, I take my scalpel in there and you cut that 300 million, animal, not that many, and sure enough, falls into two. That is how the two sides of your brain communicate. I know what this side is thinking, this side. It connects homotopic area, hearing to hearing, thinking of this, thinking color, etc. Homotopic areas, 300 million. So that's what keeps our brain working together. Maybe. There's some really strange things, though. So one fella, Joe was his name, had terrible headaches, epilepsy, that went from one side of his brain to the other, so he wasn't even able to function. And so they said, let's cut his corpus callosum. And so they did. Put him to sleep, dropped a scalpel in there, and cut his corpus callosum. Now, I'm going to make sure that somebody has their corpus callosum connected here. Who can I pick on? Carla, come up here, please. Yeah, I mean you. Aren't you here? Is Carla here? Yeah, you are. Come on. Thought I saw you somewhere a while ago. All right, I'm going to make sure her corpus callosum connects the two sides of her brain. Because I'm slightly concerned, although she seems to be doing all right. All right, we're going to find out shortly. I want you to draw a circle with this hand and a square with this hand at the same time, and we're in a hurry. Go. Wow. Good job. Thank you. We should give her a hand. I'm sure you agree, her corpus callosum connected the two sides. And as she was deciding, the one half of the brain, obviously it's contralateral, you know that, the side of the brain controls this side. Nobody knows why God designed us that way, how all those fibers cross in here somewhere. But anyhow, a circle, they argued, and you can see nobody won, right? Neither side of her brain. Well, Joe, when they cut his corpus callosum and told him to do that, he could do it perfectly. There he is. He has been studied by many, many neuroscientists, of course. Fascinating studies that I'd love to talk about more, but flashing words on certain sides to see what he says and thinks and draws, just an amazing, amazing person to study. And so you can watch videos of doctors studying him because it helps them understand which sides of the brain seem to be more responsible for certain things, like words and recognizing objects, etc. Fascinating thing to study. You can do that later. But he is able to draw a circle and a square because he jokes he has two brains. But he can tie his shoes. And one thing, and I'm going to say this now, but because I want to say this. They cannot explain this. They can take a man like this, and they can use... it's not like one eye is one half the brain and this eye is the other half. It's actually crosses, right? At the optic chiasm right in here somewhere. It's sides. So this side of my vision goes to the one side. This side goes to the other. Now, nobody knows how this works. They can allow a person to see like a ball on this side. And then a broken window on this side. And then ask the person, so what do you make sense of what you said? A ball smashed a window. Even though the corpus callosum is cut, they cannot explain that. Of course can't. Some would say that proves the mind transcends the brain and somehow knows what's going on, even though inside the brain there is absolutely no way for that information to have been shared through the corpus callosum because it was cut. So that's one of the ways that is argued that the mind transcends the function, the physical function of the brain. And obviously others as well, like seizures, etc. All right, we don't have much time to talk about this, but another way to divide the brain, other than the left hemisphere, right hemisphere, cerebrum, cerebellum, is in lobes. Just like we could divide you in men and women, we could divide you, got glasses, don't have glasses, we could divide you by age. That's just multiple ways of dividing a structure. So, does anybody know what we do with the back of our heads called the occipital lobe? What do? We?
See.
Yeah, entirely seen. So that would mean that the front of our eyes are almost like a camera lens that blink, 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 right? But the SD card records it. So if you hit your head really badly and see stars, that's why. It messes up the circuitry. We see with the back. So a person that would have a terrible accident to the back of the brain could be completely blind, or a lesion or some or stroke, a tumor in the back of the brain could be completely blind, even though the front of their eyes and the retina and the nerves taking it back are all working fine. But when it gets back there, there's nothing to record it. So we do see from here, the back, and then that projects forward to allow us to think about it. Obviously, there's a complex pathways, but it projects some to the colors we're seeing, to the people, to what we want to think about. But the first projection of what we see is the back of the brain. We do not think with the back of the brain. Does anybody know what part of the brain do we actually think with? Yes, the frontal lobe. So somebody that has terrible damage here to the frontal lobe could lose the ability to think. Now, they do not understand this. Because a person can have half their brain missing and be completely normal. The next person can have just a little stroke and take away their ability to function normally. They do not understand that. Back to the frontal lobe. My cousin, just to tell you one story, and I was going to have you all hold your breath, but you can try that. If you hold your breath for a little bit, soon there's a buildup of carbon dioxide in the brain because the blood, of course, is taking oxygen and carbon dioxide away, and your brain says, breathe. And if you say, I'm not going to breathe, after a while, what will it do to you if you refuse to breathe? What will your brain do? Nobody takes their own life by not breathing. in that way. Yeah, you'll pass out. And then you'll breathe and your brain will say, ha-ha, I made you breathe. Right? I'll just knock you out. So my cousin, this is now not quite 40 years ago. I think he was 20. We're about the same age, so a little less than 40. He was going home from work right here in Ephrata. And Dwayne, his cousin, was driving. And suddenly my cousin, 20 years old, in the passenger seat started to flail. His brother realized right away, probably something going on with his heart. You probably know, almost 40 years ago, there were no cell phones. Rushed him to the hospital in Ephrata. They weren't ready for him because nobody called saying there's an emergency. Till they came out, it was 15 minutes. Now, God made it, and I don't know why, that your brain shunts away blood from your frontal part of your brain to other parts of the brain that you must have to stay alive. So the first part of your brain that's going to start to die is your frontal lobe. And that's what happened. And in those 15 minutes, as far as the doctors would say, his entire frontal lobe or basically was completely destroyed. But he lived another, I think, almost 15 years. I would go visit him. Doug, how are you doing today? And it would just be, but was his mind working? See, we don't know. Never talk to somebody in a coma or a vegetable state about something you don't want them to understand. They might understand it. There's people who've come back and said, I could hear everything, but I couldn't respond back out. So we don't know. But we were careful what we said around him, although it surely looked like he wasn't understanding anything. The cerebellum, I'll just tell you this instead of having somebody come up to prove that you have your cerebellum. Your cerebellum simply learns how to do skilled motor exercises. I cannot juggle. If I would try to juggle, you would laugh. I would put on quite a show. But I would not want you to be talking to me. I would want to concentrate with my frontal lobe. And I would be like, okay, how does it? Okay, throw it up, catch, throw, okay. And after a while, maybe my cerebellum, that little brain back there that you didn't know you have, would start saying, oh, you like to juggle. Hey, I will fire thousands of axons at an incredible rate in the right sequence so you can juggle and you can talk. Or you can ride a bike. So somebody who loses their cerebellum will never walk again normally. It will always be concentration. Like a little baby. Why? Because the part of the brain that memorizes how to use my hands gracefully, how to juggle, how to walk, how to ride a bicycle, how to take a drink, it would always be, never, please, children, I'm sure you don't, but never make fun of people who don't have a particular ability, whether that's a child or an old person. I think of it often when I go into an old people's home. You know, they make some funny noises. They do some funny things. But guess what? One day I'm going to be making funny noises and doing funny things too if I live that old. Because when those abilities are not in the brain, that person can't override those. Those are abilities that God gave us through the function of our brain. So the cerebellum allows us to forget about what we're trying to do. Can you imagine a person playing piano? The incredible firing of a memorized song? Must be a very beautiful cerebellum. And last of all, if I could just steal one more minute, I'm just going to show you this part of the brain does not die. So this died, but this part goes last, called your spinal, your brainstem, the top part of your spinal cord. So to just explain this, and I'm sure a lot of you know this, if somebody's in an accident and their brain starts to swell, doctors get very excited. There's only one place for your brain to go when it swells. Your hand can just... Where can your brain go? Not out through the eyes. There's a thin shell of bone. Ears? No, that's blocked. Heads are pretty hard. Hard-headed people? That's good. Except when your brain needs to swell. Where is there only one place for it to go? Down through the foramen magnum, which would be the top part of your spinal column right here. So that swelling is going to stuff this down, and this is where heartbeat is all in here. And breathing. And so you know if you squeeze a muscle hard enough, you can stop the impulses. So somebody with a perfectly fine body and perfectly almost perfectly good overall, but had a hit to the head that causes it to swell. That's why the doctors will get very excited. And they might cool the body down or take some of the skull bone out to allow it to swell. Because the last thing that they want to happen is for the brain stem to be stuffed down that hole at the top of our vertebral column, because that squeezing can take a person with a completely good body and shut that off, and they'll die just like that. Because those impulses to the most important parts of our body, breathing and heartbeat, are controlled in this general area. Obviously, this is multiple parts and pieces, but collectively, it's simply called the brain stem. All right, my time is up. Thank you for your attention. I hope your brains caught a little bit of that and actually changed a little bit tonight. And may it lead your wonder to worship. And Lord willing, the next time we'll kind of come back, review briefly, and we'll go particularly into neurons and a little more how our brains actually work, and then the effects of drugs on the brain. All right. Thank you.